You are now entering the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.
Hello, and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. For our number one this week, we have Material Number One.
The Material.
Is it Alice Cott?
Alice Cott.
Nailed it. On Image. Our overrated, underrated is 80s pop songs to kind of, you know, counteract our satanic bands from last week. Before we go too far, you can find me on Twitter at xorsonx. You can find Joe on Twitter at grampire. You can find Chris on Twitter at skatexedge. And you can find Brian on Twitter at purerockfury. We also are still kicking, well, me and Brian are kicking some serious ass on reviewandroast.com, where we're writing reviews and doing lots of stuff and making things happen. So we need you guys to come on over there and make stuff happen with us.
Which means that I'm not doing anything.
No. Well, I mean, he signed up, so that proves that it's easy and anybody out there can do it. Joe does have
one. It's the first step.
Joe does have one review up there, so I mean.
Of Mortal Kombat.
Well, it's better than your review.
Surprise, yeah.
Nailed it.
Of invisible reviews.
Yeah. Other than that.
Scott is still rotund.
Yeah, pretty much. Nailed it.
That's rude.
All right, so
I meant it in a loving way.
Everyone usually does. Again, it's been a busy week of website stuff and basically trying to get through Dune as much as possible so that I can put that on the back burner or shelf, whatever, and move on to other things. As far as even comics, I mean, I barely touched my pile this week, which is pretty terrible. I don't know.
That sounded weird.
The only thing the only thing I can think of off the top of my head that I did read was that Mantle that somebody reviewed for the site, probably you.
Yeah, it had to be Brian.
Yeah. I don't know if we're talking to them guys about something, but yeah, I really haven't done much of anything outside of Dune, so if anyone else has anything they want to mention that was dope, make sure it's fresh. Word.
Can you hear me now?
With a vengeance.
Wasn't that what we were looking for and they didn't have it today?
Yeah, I have it because my comics.
Your comic store is better than ours, is what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it had it. I read a bunch of stuff. Dude, I've read so much stuff. Like, what did I read? Wayward 8, The Empty 4.
Oh, yeah, I just got that today. I'm so looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm glad I went. I'm glad you guys told me to go back to it because it actually is awesome. I'm trying to think, what else did I get? What else did I read? I read Luther Strode, The Strange Talent of Luther Strode.
Justin Jordan.
Yep. Just sitting here eating some donuts.
Nailed it.
Looking up nude photos of Debbie Gibson in Playboy.
Everyone wanted to know that, yes.
I actually finished the second volume of Southern Bastards, which was issues 5 through 8.
And we can never talk about anything because fucking Slow Pants McGillicuddy over here.
Slow Pants McGillicuddy with the 2-hour drive home, review and roast.
Anyhow, that's
without,
the decision you made.
Without spoiling anything, I will say that I'm still totally on board. It's a really good series. It is not what you expect, especially when you go straight from the first arc and then you wait for all of the second arc and then you read that and you see the direction that it takes and you're just like, okay, I did not see that coming. And it's not, I don't know, you know, you can't really lump it in with anything. You can't, I can't really, it's about, like we said earlier, how
Southern
did we
hospice.
Put it?
Deliverance meets Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, it's like Deliverance meets like some kind of like violent ass Friday Night Lights meets, you know, I don't even know. Just it's just completely insane.
It's
but
humiliation with the Southern tip.
Yeah, it's just completely nuts.
Come on, because in that second arc, he gets humiliated a lot.
Yeah, it gets pretty brutal, but, you know, it's not the common thing that you think of when you think of comic books. Definitely. Even along the lines of adult stuff, it's very, very unique. And, like I said, you know, I'm all the way caught up, so that's up to issue 8 now, and
it's just
firmly
awesome.
Firmly on board.
I feel like that's been out long enough to have more than 8 issues.
Well, the 9th one's coming out.
Yeah,
well,
this month.
I meant, you know, more than that.
But well, considering he's writing Star Wars and Thor,
he's written a lot of crap.
Yeah, he's kind of a busy guy,
stretched a little thin, then, huh?
I would guess.
Fine, I guess I'll take over. This thing is awesome.
No?
No.
Not really. Right.
Well, whatever.
Pretty much terrible.
Right. I don't even know what to say.
Let me think. The main thing that stood out to me this week was the first trade of Furious by Brian J.L. Glass, the guy who is the writer-creator of the Mice Templar. I did not know that when I bought Furious. Furious looked kind of interesting to me, but I just said, my usual, I'll wait for the trade. Found the trade at St. Louis Comic-Con for $4 brand new, which is a steal.
Oh, yeah.
If I had known it was the guy who wrote the Mice Templar, I might have second-guessed buying it, because I did not like the Mice Templar, but this book was pretty rad. It's about a girl who is a child star, and her dad keeps pushing her to be famous. She's on a famous sitcom. She has a string of really popular movies. And like a lot of child stars, she kind of falls into drugs, alcohol, partying, and all kinds of gossip rag scandal. And she becomes friend with a child prostitute, and she takes her under her wing, and they go out partying, and the girl ends up disappearing, and she goes into a drug rehab and comes out as a superhero. And her whole shtick after she becomes the superhero, the Beacon, is she wants to finally do something good with her life, but because the media is 24/7, they get a cell phone video of her beating up a bad guy, and they're like, oh, look at this unauthorized vigilante who's assaulting people. And she becomes known as Furious. The media starts just calling her Furious. It's like, look, she's just furious all the time. She's violent and uncharacteristic of what we think of. And actually, I was pretty impressed, because Dark Horse is trying to create this whole new superhero universe, and some of the stuff that I've checked out so far has been highly disappointing. And this one was really good. Kind of a Lindsay Lohan as the star of The Dark Knight Returns kind of thing, but more brutal.
Hmm.
Pretty awesome book. I was pretty impressed.
That's
Is that still like a thing, or is it just
The volume I have is called Fallen Star, but it's also labeled number one, which tells me that at some point or another it will come back and do a second arc. And it ended like it kind of ended vaguely. The girl who is her like arch nemesis doesn't get defeated. She kind of just goes away. So it left it wide open for more. So I have a feeling at some point it'll come back.
I think they try to leave everything open for more, just in case it picks up steam one day. They can always come back. Yeah,
but it does sound like an interesting mix of things.
Oh, something tells me that it probably didn't sell super well, but I used my review and roast stroke to try and bolster its popularity a little bit. So we'll see how, when the sequel comes out, you're welcome.
Yeah, I'm going to say, like, I don't even remember how long it's been since we went to our first Comic-Con, but when we first went was right around the time that guy had just got through the first couple issues of Mice Templar, because me and Joe, I believe Joe bought them too, but we had them all signed and bought. And I remember, you know, I mean, I read them a few years ago, but I don't remember that much about them to say, like, if I, you know, I remember I kind of liked them. I don't know. I'd have to reread them, but that's kind of cool that that guy's actually starting to come along, I guess.
Well, Mice Templar was put out by Image, but it was pre-Walking Dead, I think.
Yeah.
I bought the first volume hardcover because I remember you were talking about it, and I don't remember if you were raving on it or if you're just like, oh, this looked kind of neat. And I bought the hardcover, and it was like a struggle to get through.
You know, when it comes to Comic-Cons, when what's going to sell me the most is how excited the person gets explaining it to me. You know, like, if you do a good job explaining your story, you are excited about it, you're in turn going to get me excited about it. But, it, you know, if I come up to your booth and you're like, yeah, I wrote it. Yeah, it's about stuff. Like, I'm just going to keep walking. But this guy was super into it. You know, I remember talking to this guy, you know, pretty.
Yeah, he was very animated.
Yeah.
Very, very into what he was putting out there.
He could have been selling old shoes, and I'd have been like, dude, I'll take a pair. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, he was really
really into it.
I got these underwear. They're on me right now, and they're gross. But, you know, if you want them, $10.
Girls' underpants.
That's gross.
What?
I just piqued Joe's interest.
No, I'm just wondering how we took that the turn down that road. we're cruising down the highway. All of a sudden, somebody pulls off the creepy avenue. What the fuck?
Isn't that somewhere in Joliet?
And that's why I'm here.
I think it's in Gary, Indiana.
Yeah. I mean, other than that, is anyone? I mean, that's pretty much everybody's talking.
Yeah.
No Mercy I read. That's really good. I just had them all in my head now.
I read Mr. Popper's Penguins in fifth grade. That was amazing.
I know, right?
Shut up.
There was this one thing, Catcher in the Rye. I don't know if you ever heard of it. Actually, I recently read that
again. I can't
ever
say anything about it because none of you ass wipes have read it, so...
You go, I read it, I really enjoyed it. You don't have to give away anything.
Well, like maybe just say
a little
song.
I just talked about how much I like Southern Bastards without totally berating Brian for not having read as much as I have.
Oh.
Or Scott for, you haven't started yet, have you, Scott?
I have the first issue, and I'm not talking trades, I'm talking...
You're talking single.
It's so, right over there in the pile.
Yeah, so at this point, you might just want to go ahead and get the first trade. It's literally, I think it's $9.99. I'm positive it's $9.99.
That's too much.
You know, $10.
I'm not made of money.
Right? What am I, Scott Romney over here?
With that microphone, yeah, you are.
This thing was cheap, but it's awesome because it's better than the one you're using. Nerd. But, anyway, but a little, I know it's a little off topic, but back to the whole Catcher in the Rye. I read it in high school, and a few months back at Half Price Books, I was like, I'm going to get some of these books that I haven't read in 15, 20 years, and I'm going to give them another look, you know? So I bought that, and I bought To Kill a Mockingbird or whatever. So I read Catcher in the Rye for the second time now, 20 years later, and yeah, it wasn't as good as it was when I was in high school.
I read it at the same time because you were so highly touting it, and that book was barely readable. I mean, it was okay.
Yeah, I remember in high school.
I feel like you need to be in high school to enjoy
it. Yes, very much so.
You read it as an adult, and you're like, oh, this guy is like the whiniest kid ever. I just want to throw him in front of the train and just be done with it. This book could have been 10 pages long. So anyway, my dick's too small. It's snowing outside. Where's my lunch? And it's like, I hate this kid.
Yeah, if you didn't read it in high school, you kind of missed it. Don't bother is basically what we're getting at here.
Yeah.
Moving along to our number one for the week, which I had mentioned was Material Number One on Image by Alice Cott. This one was Brian's pick, so we're going to let him kind of give you a little synopsis and whatnot and talk about it.
Synopses.
Take synopsi. It away.
Synopsi, yes. Synopsario.
Nice.
Synopify that shit, man.
I wasn't really entirely aware, but the guy, Alice Cott, that wrote Material also was the writer of Zero and of The Surface.
Zero, like the lobby boy from...
No. Zing.
No. Zero of the Awesome Comic.
And The Surface, which I said was like this guy's attempt to rewrite Grant Morrison's The Filth, which I kind of still stand by. This book essentially is four stories in one. There is a college professor at MIT who is explaining the concept of technological devices causing societal disconnect.
And quantum physics.
And yeah, he's going on and on. He's doing a lecture in front of his class, and one kid is arguing with him about social media or something to that effect. And he goes home, and he gets propositioned by some artificial intelligence.
Supposedly.
Yeah. Supposedly, yeah, it could be spam, but we didn't get that deep into it. Actually, prior to that, he's talking to his daughter over Skype, which is funny because he's lecturing his class about how technology is causing society to disconnect from one another, and it's making everything impersonal, and yet he's talking to his own daughter over the computer.
Kind of think that might have been the point, though.
Contradicting himself was the point. Then the second story involved like a washed-up movie actress who was about to take a role with the next big director, and they're sitting in a meeting, and
she's all coked out.
Oh, not necessarily.
No, she's high.
She was snorting Klonopin, not coke.
And that was prior to the meeting. The meeting was where the director is trying to defend his vision, and the suits at the studio are trying to go, well, we need a big name here. We need to tweak the dialogue, and so on and so forth. And
the usual.
Then the third story involved the guy who... Oh, right, you're right. The riot in Chicago, when they kind of go through the whole names of actual victims of police violence, Michael Brown being the most prominent one there. If you look at the bottom of each page, there's like a little...
Like names.
Almost like
Google.
Cliff Notes.
There's like a little, like, you know, see this book, see this author, here's this quote, blah, 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 which I actually thought was kind of neat. And then the fourth story was the guy who comes back from Guantanamo Bay after 7 months, and he's like got some serious like anxiety problems.
Yeah.
And when it's all said and done, you're really just getting the very, very introductory portion of each of these character stories. It doesn't even come close to explaining how this woman in California, this kid in Chicago, this guy in Oklahoma, and this professor in Boston have any relation to one another at all.
Yeah, if their stories cross or not. Or
that said, this might be my favorite number one in a good couple months. Like, by miles. This thing is just really, really very intelligently put together.
Yeah.
Very different. And I don't know how many issues this guy has planned for this series, but I really, like, right away, I'm like, this thing is excellent.
That's the first thing I thought of when I was
texting me about it, I was thinking, oh, my God, this thing's going to suck.
No, I told you. I said this thing has a possibility of totally breaking itself off from a comic book.
It's like, very high concept, but not in the Jonathan Hickman high concept views through science fiction way. This is, like, very much grounded in real events and real possibilities, and some of the references in here are so recent. Like, for example, they reference the Black Ops site on the south side of Chicago, which actually exists, which was outed in the news a couple months ago, where cops were taking criminals, and I'm using air quotes, and essentially torturing them off the books. And that's been going on for a while. It was essentially Guantanamo Bay in Logan Park or wherever, Bogan Park or whatever neighborhood.
Yeah, it wasn't... Well,
it was like south of Bridgeport or something.
That was the Chicago story. It was basically a protest. This kid was holding a sign. Next thing you know, he gets clubbed by the cops, and then he wakes up in a room being interrogated and waterboarded and shit. You know, like...
No, the guy from Guantanamo
Did
was
you
reliving.
Just say
he was
motorboated?
Yeah, right. That was the Guantanamo guy. I got my stories just slightly mixed up.
But there, I'm saying, like, it's crazy to read this because some of these things just came out in the news maybe in, like, March. And, like, this guy's got this book done and on store shelves 2 months later.
You know what? I feel like that's, like, with a story like this where you're trying to, like, relay it to actual events, like, the closer you do it to the event, the more impact it possibly can have. So I think he had to get it out, you know, as soon as possible.
Yeah, I don't think Alice Cott is doing too much right now because he's wrapping up Zero, too. Well, not to discredit him or anything, but, you know.
He's doing The Surface, though.
Oh, okay. I take that back then.
But that's only a four-issue series, though. I could be wrong.
But anywho, go ahead.
I'm just saying, like, that's kind of the synopsis of each story. And this book does not give you a single clue as to how these four stories relate. But I'm wildly intrigued. And I'm definitely sticking with this.
Yeah.
And I didn't even talk about how amazing the art is either.
No, I was going to say, yeah, that's like one of the best parts about it.
The panel layouts, the weird, sketchy artwork kind of being representative of the sketchiness of each story. The weird, like, duotone panels with the oranges and the, like, weird aqua colors and such. I just, like, everything about this thing rules.
Yeah, they definitely
use... Not to cheapen the whole thing by saying, rules!
They definitely use the coloring to differentiate between the stories, you know, that you knew you were getting into something, you know, much different from what you were just reading.
I think it's safe to say there's nothing out there like this right now.
No.
In comics.
No, not at all.
Like, it's definitely like... Well, when I first saw it was coming out and I saw the cover, I'm like, huh. I was kind of thinking, like, what's this going to be about? I'm like, it's got to be about some kind of... I don't know. I was thinking of, like, that Channel Zero that Brian Wood did, or... I was thinking, like I started thinking of, like, the Anarchist Cookbook. And
yeah.
Well, just by looking at the cover. But, I mean, I like the cover. I think the cover is awesome. But then, like, I'm reading it, and I mean... Like, at first, after I was done reading it, I was like, I felt kind of stupid. I was like, what? It's not like I didn't understand it, but I think I spent too much time trying to figure out. Like, I was looking ahead too much, like, thinking, like, oh, how do these stories all tie into each other? And it's the more I thought about it, the more confused I got. And I was like, oh, I'm like. But when you do think about it, I mean, it's the first issue, and it's. You don't want to give it all away, but, I mean, it's definitely interested to see. I want to see what the hell, like, how this all pans out.
See, I from what you guys are saying, I feel I have some explaining to do on my view, so when I score it, people aren't like, what? It's not that I didn't enjoy it, but because you don't really get an idea of how that stuff really makes sense together, because you have these different stories, but, I mean, where they really had me at the start with the scientist or the...
Yeah, professor.
Yeah, the professor doing the lecture and everything. And then it kind of went into this story about this movie, and I'm like, what? I don't get it. And how I look at things are... Just because, I mean, we're reviewing the first one in a series. This is not to say that it can't go somewhere or this will evolve into something. Obviously, I see that there's room. There isn't a low ceiling. There's room for potential and growth. So just so people know that, understand that when I give my score for it.
Well, I'll probably just elaborate a little bit on that, too. Like, the only other story that comes to mind that has different stories in it was Bodies. But even in the first issue, like, you can tell that they're all tied together by the dead body.
Right.
Where
right.
in this, there's
don't
nothing
know.
To tie them together. With a story like this, I think you got to be really careful in showing there's some kind of significance to how these stories will relate. Because you might lose a lot of people.
I think I would have liked something, just a little.
Just a hint.
I'm not
saying I hate it. Like, I think, like, obviously, as standalone stories, the four stories in here, all are very intriguing. But you know it's going to turn out to be one story, and they're all going to tie together somehow. But not knowing that kind of took just a little smidge away for me.
The more I think about it now, I think one of the things that is probably similar between all of those characters is fear. Fear of whatever, you know? Like,
Okay. True. I didn't even think of it that way.
If you think about the actress, she's probably got a fear of becoming, you know, a third-rate, a C-list actor.
Failure.
Know? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I didn't even think of it. Like, she probably does drugs so she doesn't have to face the possibility that someday she'll become irrelevant just based on
the guy
her
in Guantanamo Bay, like you said, he's got a fear of... Something happened to him, obviously, so now he's
afraid of the dog.
He's paranoid.
Because he was attacked by dogs.
That's
when
probably
he was
what
there.
The similarity is between them, fear and paranoia.
Fucking nailing it there.
Yeah, I didn't even. That didn't even like.
And then, well, then there was the honestly, kid in Chicago.
Honestly, I just thought about it, and when I started thinking about it more and started dwelling on it some more, I started thinking about all four characters. And I'm like, okay, well, what's the same thing? What do they have that's the same? And I'm like, oh, they have a fear of something.
Yeah, I didn't even. That didn't even dawn on me really. I mean, obviously, the guy from Guantanamo had obvious fear. He was afraid of the dog. He was, you know, I need to talk to you right now. And the lady's like, you know, if you try anything, I'm going to fucking kick your ass. And
right, yeah.
Then there was the professor who's clearly, he's doing the whole, like, I'm smarter than everybody because I have a PhD. But clearly he's afraid of technology in some weird way, even though he's using it.
He's like, what's his face from The Good Guys? I don't trust these computer machines.
Yeah, see?
I mean, do we want to number it, or do you want to?
Well, my number go is on even went or? Even more now. Now that I kind of,
I'm okay with numbering. I mean, I don't want to give any. There's really not a lot to give away, but I feel like if I continue to talk, I'm going to give away some things.
No, it's definitely a very intriguing book, and I am definitely adding it to my box because I feel
like there's going to be an aha moment somewhere down the line.
Yeah, I mean, as a standalone issue, I'm really honestly only going to go like.
It's like seeing the first 10 minutes of a movie and expecting to be able to explain it.
I like how he's about that's a comic that could actually like break itself away from like the comic genre.
Yeah.
That's what I feel. Like after I read it, I was like, "Man, I'm like this thing has like the potential of breaking itself away from your atypical comic that someone thinks of. When they think of a typical comic, they think of superhero. This has got like, you know, like social issues, you know, I mean, relevant ones, you know, of this year.
Right,
you know,
and it doesn't beat around the bush.
5 years, really.
Like how we kind of were talking about when The Empty came out and we did number one, we're like, oh, it's kind of touching on these things, but like in a weird sci-fi way.
Well, yeah, now that I've gone more into it, now I definitely see what Brian was saying in the first issue, how it does relate to those social issues.
This doesn't beat around the bush. This is going into true, actual event stories. I mean, it's...
And I like that stuff, even if it's stuff that I don't even like necessarily agree with. I, you know, challenge me, make me think about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Minute. I'm totally down with that.
But again, I don't want.
And it did. I like been thinking about it for like days. I'm like,
see, I just read it this morning.
What am I going to say?
Well, I just read it before this.
So. I read it this morning, but I mean, I combed each page with a like very finely because I'm like, I feel like if I go too quickly, I'm going to miss something.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to take anything away from it. Like I said, I'm fully expecting this to be a fantastic overall book, but as a standalone, doesn't really explain much about how they all tie together. I'm honestly, like, it's good, so I'll give it, like, a 6.5. And that's not a bad score. Dude, average is 5.
Each his own.
6.5 is still above average.
Okay,
it's a good book, but as a standalone thing, like... You know it's going to get better, but I can't rate it on something I haven't read yet, is basically all I'm saying.
I would just like to say, in Scott's defense, people don't seem to understand that when you do things on a 10-point scale, 5 is average. That doesn't mean bad. That doesn't mean amazing. That just means, hey, that's average. That's pretty decent.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's good stuff. And then once you're above that 5.5 and above, because, I mean, we typically do it on the halves, 5.5 and above is above average. You have to think about it in those terms.
Not everything we do can be 7, 8,
is 10. I get it. You know, 10 is absolute greatness.
If I understand,
so to give
I wrote something.
Everything, you know, from the 8 to 10 scale is really overrating things when you get down to it.
Yeah.
I feel like if I wrote something and someone gave it a 6.5, even if it was worth less, I'd probably have a hard
time. Dude, if I wrote something and someone gave it better than a 3, I'd be fucking doing cartwheels. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, man, if I do something and you give me above a 5, you know, out of a 10-point scale, yeah, if you give me above 5 and your scale's like... You know, out of fucking 100.
Right, fine.
Basically, if the very last page would have been like somehow tied all of them together with something, instantly would have given it way more.
See, I feel like that is holding your hand a little bit, and I feel like the fact that he didn't do that, like, it's like it left me with so many questions. I'm like, I can't not get the next one.
Oh, I'm not saying I'm not getting
it. No, I know. I'm just saying, like, I don't know. I mean, you're fine. I mean, your score is your score, whatever.
Well, let's get through this.
Brian and I are going to probably have the same score.
Okay, yeah. Like I said, there was somewhat of an explanation for mine. I definitely see it as having a very high ceiling. They definitely have places they can go with this. I was most particularly interested in the scientific part of the story, more so than the other parts, but it would be interesting to see how they tie in together, and I'm also going 6.5. Like I said, I definitely think there's something to keep me there, but who knows? By the time the series gets done, overall, the whole series might be a 9. You know what I'm saying? It might overall end up being a 10. You know, once all put together. We're just basing it off of the very beginning. Like, you know, I think it was like Scott said, we're basing it off the first 10 minutes of the movie. Was that you who said that?
That was Brian. I said that.
Yeah. We're basing it off the first 10 minutes of the movie. And believe me, there are some movies that I really enjoy, but if I base it off the first 10 minutes, my score would look like I hated it. So.
Boom. Go, Chris. Hurry.
No, because I'm pretty sure Brian's going to give it the same number, so you just go ahead and you give your number.
I'm going 9.5.
There you go.
I thought this thing was pretty close to flawless.
You can go and kiss
our asses. Despite the many questions left at the end, the whole setup is practically genius in my eyes. I think that this Alice Cott guy is just fucking talented beyond words, and he is very, very quickly rising his name up my list along with the Hickmans and the Brubakers of the world. So I think this guy's got some kooky ideas, and he has a really interesting way of pulling them off. Actually, like I said, between Zero, the surface confuses me to high hell, and I still think it's like the most fascinating thing out there, and this book just blew it out of the water for me. So the 9.5 easily. If he puts together a couple East to West and Manhattan projects, I would have given this a 10. But I'm trying to scale back to 10s just a smidge because I know Mike got upset.
All right, so apparently there's been some talk around the interwebs of Jason Statham being in talks with Marvel to be the next villain on season 2 of Daredevil, if I read that correctly.
Yep.
And apparently, yeah, that's all wrong. I'm sure he's talking to Marvel, which I think.
What I read as of this afternoon was initially there were rumors Marvel wanted him to play Bullseye in season 2 of Daredevil.
Right.
And there's a video that just came out for the spy movie that he's in, where he essentially was ripping on Marvel, saying anybody could be in those movies. You could put my grandmother in a cape and she could do all the stunts in front of a green screen. He goes, I'd much rather watch dudes who can actually physically do the stunts for real. Which brings me to 2 points. A, how the fuck do you know you've never been on the set of a Marvel movie? And B, I'm going to just go ahead and say your filmography of the last 8 years is not exactly fucking bulletproof there, guy. And I love Jason Statham, but some of his movies are downright stupid.
His best movie ever, he didn't do any fucking stunts in.
Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels?
Snatch.
I actually am more of a Lock, Stock guy, but I love Snatch too. And you're right, he did no stunts in those two movies and no stunts in The Bank Job. Those are his three best movies.
Yeah, Bank Job. I forgot about that movie.
But as a Jason Statham fan, how many duds has he made?
Transporter 2 and 3.
What's that one movie
actually,
where
I
he's like electric? Like,
I don't
have to like electrically charge himself. Or
that was the dumbest fucking movie, and I can't believe they made a sequel to it.
Crank.
Yeah.
Crank. The only good thing about that is when he's banging Amy Smart.
In full view, like bent her over like the mailbox.
Yeah,
or
bent her over and starts doing her doggy style.
The first one was kind of funny. It really didn't require a sequel though.
Dude, I saw the sequel.
Let me tell you. So did I.
I think I watched it with you and we were like,
yeah,
why?
We were
and
here.
You guys
were
holding
here.
Hands.
We're like,
we're touching.
I was like, well, at least I could say I saw it. I'll never need to see it again though.
Amen to that.
It wasn't bad enough to where I was like, good Lord, I should like build a time machine so I can get that time back, but it was not the greatest time spent. It was dumb.
But I furiously defended that guy's movies for a long time, and they became harder and harder to defend as he kept making one terrible piece of junk after the next.
He kind of did that thing where he, early in his career, he did some really cool stuff, and he became known as this, like, the new, like, cool guy actor, you know? But then he just got caught in the cheese blender and just, like,
oh, he dove willingly head first into... Dude, he made Death Race, an unnecessary remake that was barely watchable. Crank, we've covered how hilarious in a not-so-good way that those two movies are. The three Transporter movies, actually, truthfully, I liked the second one.
I liked the first one.
The first one was just okay. The second one was actually kind of good in that it was, like, unbelievably cheesy. I didn't see the third one. But some of his other movies are just terrible, and like they became inexcusable after a while. So for him to sit there and be like, oh, those Captain America movies are cheesy, like, go dude, all I'm gonna say this, every Marvel movie has at least a 70% Rotten Tomatoes score. You would need to take 10 of his movies to get a 70% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's how bad his movie career has gone.
I will say this, him saying that about the Marvel movies and stuff, that was just stupid because, you know, just keep your mouth shut. You have the potential to make a good amount of money. You know what I'm saying? Just why are you that angry?
And he who cares?
You know, honestly,
you know what? I'm wondering, did he already get rejected, already knew he was rejected, said that before, you know?
He said that before they made an offer or before they expressed interest, apparently.
Oh, well, then... That's stupid. Stop.
There's
that,
been rumor.
You know, stop burning bridges before you even get to them.
There was a rumor going around that DC wanted him to play Deathstroke, which would
that
have been great.
Could have been awesome.
But, like, again, if you are going to make that kind of a statement, you better have an amazing movie career going to do so. And his Rotten Tomato cumulative score is, what, 14?
Well, the thing is that, all right, I am, as you guys know, I'm a big fan of Charles Bronson. I really love his stuff. He's just got some kick-ass movies. And he redid The Mechanic, which is, I think, one of Charles Bronson's really good movies. I love that movie. And I think he did a good job of that. You know,
that was one
I don't
of his better.
He,
recent
yeah,
movies.
I don't think he did a bad job.
I'm
of
glad
it.
You said that because they're doing another one.
What do you mean,
Mechanic Resurrection?
Right.
How do you feel now?
I don't know about that.
I'm gonna say. Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say I read the entire quote, and it basically was like, "Yeah, I can put a cape on my grandma, put her in front of green screen, and pay all the stunt doubles to do the actual stunts." He's like, "I'm not saying it's, you know, bad. I'm just saying it's not authentic." You know, and I get it. You know, you're in the action movies, you do all the stunts yourself, but like, there's a lot of stuff going on in these Marvel movies that you can't do without CGI. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I you know what? I don't think Chris Evans was getting bulked up so he can have a stunt double do his fights in the Captain America movies. I think Jason Statham should have done a little homework before he made a dumb statement like that, because like Chris just said, he made three Expendables movies, and really, there only needed to be one.
You know what? As much as I wanted to like two and three, well, I haven't seen three, but two really
should
wasn't
have been any at all.
The first one's actually pretty good, but it definitely needs more Terry Crews. Like, that's where, like, the awesome shit is. Like,
it was good for what it was, but then when they're like, oh, we're going to crank out another, we're going to make a franchise. Like,
yeah,
no.
You ruined it.
No, you don't need to do that. No, yeah. Oh, you're going to do that.
Like, it was good for what it was, but yeah, you don't need two, three, four.
It's like the Big Mac is fine as is. You don't need to do one with barbecue sauce and one with strawberry jelly on it. I'm just saying.
Why weird?
Well, because they want to make an Expendables movie with all females now.
Oh,
like, next, we're going to do the pet Expendables. The, like, pet Expendables.
The whole point
Archie
of
the
Expendables was taking all the 80s action stars and cramming them into one movie. There are no 80s female action stars.
No, they want to get, like, that Gina Carano and...
Yeah, but you're talking about a bunch of female actresses that haven't really done any action movies.
Colonel Sanders.
You're just going to jam them into an Expendables just for a quick buck. Like
Mona from Who's the Boss.
I'll just
be awesome.
I'll just say that if Jason Statham had done a Marvel movie, it'd probably be his best rated movie in quite a long time.
It absolutely would be.
Since The Bank Job. That was like the last movie he did with like critics actually are like, oh, this is
why
bad.
Would like literally as an actor at this point, why would you talk shit about the biggest money making machine on the planet?
Because you're
because you're pissed.
You know what? You know what it was. Role. You know what it was. It was probably he felt he was at the point where they haven't called me for anything. I've wanted an offer. I haven't gotten one by now. I'm going to just publicly tell them to fuck off. So, because if I'm not getting
maybe.
One, fuck them. And he maybe. Got mad and he fucking let it go publicly just a little too early. And they were like, oh, you just fucked it up. Damn. Well, I guess we're offering somebody else something.
That's the thing. There have been rumors for about 6 or 8 months now that studios were considering Jason Statham for several comic book movie roles.
Yeah, and
he like
probably...
he was a name being tossed around for Frank Castle. His name was being tossed around as Daredevil.
That I can see, yeah.
And
I could have seen
Deathstroke,
Frank Castle.
There was like 5 characters mentioned with his name attached to
too.
It.
Let's go back to that Punisher, Frank Castle. Scott, did you ever see that one thing on YouTube?
The laundry or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
All right. Just making sure.
Yeah.
You saw it, right, Joe?
Yeah.
Dirty Laundry.
That thing's awesome.
I'm saying that would have been Jason Statham's first 90 since like 1998.
I'll tell you why he's mad. Because the best thing to ever come out of Britain is Benny Hill.
What?
Yeah, you're out of your mind.
Yeah,
that's
would,
not the
I
best Benny Hill
that.
To come out of Britain.
Yeah.
You said that in the face of Monty Python.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Benny Hill.
I still like Benny Hill.
Song wise, that's a pretty good song. But other than that, no. No, fuck that guy. We tried watching that like a year ago. And we're like, what happened? We thought this was supposed to be funny. This
oh,
is,
man.
This
I,
is terrible.
I did not want to admit it either, but I was like,
just making Bewitched.
I would only watch it to watch the women run around in their underwear and
I'll
bra.
Just say, the Benny Hill episodes that we watched like a year ago made Bewitched look like fucking
comedy gold.
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah. All right, so way to go, Jason. You just ruined it.
Yeah.
For yourself.
So keep making straight to DVD videos with Dolph Lundgren then.
So apparently, the cash cow that is Robert Kirkman has signed a mega deal with AMC. What exactly does a mega deal mean?
Essentially, he's going to have free reign to develop whatever the hell he wants on AMC for a while. Inside from The Walking Dead, Thief of Thieves, and Fear of the Walking Dead, which is like, oh my god, do we really need more? But if you ask the people I work with, they'll say yes.
Outcast is supposed to be...
That's going
to
be on Cinemax.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like, you had the whole vampire craze that was, you know, back 5-6 years ago.
Oh, yeah, no,
now
it's
you
a
got
zombie
the
craze.
Now you got the zombie. I'm telling you, we need to get on the ground floor of the mummy craze.
Yeah. Well, you know what they're then trying to, you know what they're trying to do is they're yes. trying to get on the Satan train, and they need to leave that train alone.
Yeah, because that's just evil.
We,
no.
Fuck that. We need to get... I'm with Scott. We need to get on the mummy train. Because seriously, if we don't get on that shit now...
Fucking twice already, this guy.
You left him hanging.
No, forget it.
How about werewolves?
That's been... It was mixed in with the vampires. No, you're done. No more high fives for Joe. I've been saying for years we need to get some mummy action going. There hasn't been a good mummy movie since The Curse of the Mummy.
They need to leave Satan alone because Satan is cool, and I don't want him to become uncool.
We need to get on the Satan train.
Nah, the mummy
train. I think
it'd
be easy to say that Robert Kirkman knows how to make a hit, but I think that he just have his name attached to The Walking Dead and the comics, and I think the TV people knew how to make that into a hit.
Yeah, I was going to say, like... He came up with the idea. That's pretty much it. The rest was all the TV studio. Like, I'm sure he had a small part in it, but obviously they've deviated a ton from the books.
Wait a minute. He didn't come up with the idea of the dead coming back to life.
Well,
no.
You know what I mean. He came up with the story around The Walking Dead.
The story based on an idea that somebody else came up with.
Right.
That idea has been around for centuries.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah. Bob.
Going back to Haitian voodoo, which is actually where the term zombie comes from.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even George Romero was just ripping off an idea. He actually ripped his idea off from the movie The White Zombie from, like, the 1930s.
Yeah.
Which really had nothing to do with zombies.
Yeah.
Which was based on the Shakespearean play.
And actually, George Romero admits fully that he got his idea from Richard Matheson's I Am Legend.
Yeah.
Right, but bottom line is...
Originally came from the OG story, Jesus.
which came from the OG story about the Egyptian sun god.
Horus.
I would actually say the Night of the Living Dead is more creepy than The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I would say Horus is more creepy than anything.
I would go with something like it hot. I don't know. I got nothing.
I don't know. I just feel like you're giving free reign to a guy.
Zeb Brown's chicken.
He just came up with a story. You know, it's everyone else that made it the cash cow that it is. I mean, I'm not saying don't give the guy whatever, but...
Well, now they're trying to get on the Satan tip now, because you have Constantine...
I wonder more if this is them creating a pipeline between the network and Image Comics, because Image has got so many like highly rated stories out right now. I think AMC sees that and goes... Oh my God, we could just develop all this stuff.
Yeah.
I think they just want to have first crack at anything. Because, I mean, if you look at all the stuff that Image is putting out and all these rumors flying around that this is in development, this is being looked at, this is being looked at, I think AMC is like, well, we want a piece of that pie. And we've already got the main guy in house. Let's keep him here so we can go, hey, why don't we get a shot at the fade out?
And it already doesn't matter that much because. There's very little in comics that goes through the small screen, the big screen, that doesn't make money at this point.
Image is becoming a titan, though.
Yeah, Image is just raking. Like,
well, they're just trying to catch up to me.
I want my Netflix Deadpool series.
Why? You're getting a movie next year.
I want a series, too.
Well, call someone.
He wants it just made for him.
Yes. Right.
And well, it has to be rated X.
There needs to be movies, a series... Then there has to be some straight-to-DVD stuff.
And some Deadpool porn.
And then special issue editions that revolve around all the different stories. And then some T-shirts that go along with that.
Underwear.
And then
now you're
toys.
Just, now you're just rambling like a maniac.
Condoms. Yes.
Like the train hasn't derailed. It's fell off the tracks. It's rolling sideways down the hill. What? It hits a rock, flips upside down. Now it's on fire.
What train?
Hits a school bus.
Exactly. It's just a cart with
it. And now the kids are burning.
Yes. That's so, exactly where a Deadpool train would end up.
Speaking of burning, let's move on to Ron Perlman asking the fans to help make Hellboy 3. I don't understand why there needs to be help, dude. Those movies were good.
I like them both.
Apparently, they made money, but they didn't make enough money, and the studios are not interested in bankrolling.
He was a good Hellboy.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Here's all you got to do.
He's a good Hellboy.
He can take his Sons of Anarchy money, team that up with throw something on fucking Kickstarter. They can make that movie next month.
Well, I think isn't that the direction that he's talking about going? Is
Joe, I just read the headlines.
He should film it in Orland Park.
Yes, because that would be a great setting. A lot of strip malls and boring people for Hellboy 3. What do they call the old man army?
Yeah, we'd be able to hang out with them, though, probably.
See, my only problem is he's pushing it on Twitter and, like, his one tweet here, you know, anybody out there want to see Hellboy 3 as much as I do? Let's get this motherfucker trending, y'all. Let's end the trilogy. Like, no. I don't want it to end. I want it to keep going. I mean, 3 has to happen, but, like, I don't want it to just be a trilogy. Let's fucking, you know what I'm saying? Let's make this the next fucking Batman. Let's get some Hellboy shit going.
That ain't gonna happen.
Well, I'm thinking more so is he's probably looking at it as no disrespect, but he's not fucking, you know what I'm saying, 35 years old.
He even said, he goes, come on, it's been 7 years. He was like, I'm not going to be alive a whole lot longer. Let's do this.
Exactly. He's not, you know, this is going to be his last Hellboy movie. And I think that's what he's saying is, like, he would like to close out the trilogy and do it. You know what I'm saying? Not that they should never do any Hellboy. I mean, there's going to need to be a new Wolverine. There's going to need to be a new Hellboy eventually.
Well, that was the thing.
There's a new Batman coming up. You know, eventually these actors, you know, have to walk away or they get old enough to the point where they just can't do it physically anymore. It's just too demanding to do that type of role. And that's just a fact of reality.
The thing I read in the article was that no studio has interest in making a Hellboy 3, which means that there's not going to be a reboot at any point, which is why they want to close it out now
Yeah.
and Because apparently the rumor is that Hellboy is going to die at the end of the third movie.
How? He's a demon.
The reason nobody wants to touch it is because while the movies were moderately successful, they didn't bring in the kind of money that movies are bringing in nowadays. But back when Hellboy was coming out, comic movies weren't as big as they are now. With how big they are now, I just think there's like, you're stupid for not doing it. Because now is the prime time to put out some kind of comic book, anything related, and you will have guaranteed hit at the box office.
I still think it would be about as big as the other two were. I think it's a little bit more of a niche character, but like, I love that movie.
Guardians of the Galaxy, no one ever heard of.
Right, and it's also got Marvel's name attached, and it's also going to tie into the Avengers, so people knew all that going in.
Nerds knew that going in.
No, everybody knew that going in because they talked about it on the news for over a year, how it's going to eventually tie in Avengers Infinity War, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. I think you're underselling how good Hellboy would do now in this climate.
There is a possibility that, yeah, like you said, you know, with the rising popularity in comic movies that, you know, there could be a little more interest in Hellboy coming, you know, a new movie coming out. There could be definitely a little more buzz.
You always strike when the iron's hot, and it ain't getting any hotter than it is right now.
That is true.
And if
anything, it'll start slowing down after this year.
Yeah, if it does come out, there should be definitely more satanic imagery.
Yeah, I mean, what else outside of a demon?
Well, I want to see some upside down crucifixes. Some.
I'm not saying I don't want it. I would love another Hellboy.
Some burning Bibles. You don't want to see it.
I would love another Hellboy movie. I love the first two Hellboy movies.
I think actually I'm going
to like
watch
during
it
the movie, I'd like to see Morbid Angel come out of the ground and play some songs off of Covenant.
One of my favorite parts of Hellboy 2 is the part that a lot of people hated.
What part is this?
When him and Abe Sapien are hanging out in the lounge and they're singing Barry Manilow.
I like the first one. What doesn't make
sense is people hate that, but people love the whole stupid Avengers shawarma scene.
Or the
how's that any better? You know what I'm saying? Like, who cares, dude?
No, it was the comic nerds that were like, "That's not Hellboy." Like, actually, it is Hellboy. It's this guy's version of Hellboy. So
right.
Just settle.
Seeing as though it's a fictional character,
what's his name that did it?
Del Toro.
Thank you.
He wants to do another, but he also said he's going to do Justice League Dark, which would be the triumphant return of Swamp Thing to the big screen.
Well, yeah, he wants to do it. He just knows that. No studio's willing to back it, but if he said, you know, if Ron Perlman and these other people who are trying to hype it back up, if they succeed, he's like, I will absolutely be thrilled.
He's been saying for 5-6 years now that he is dying to make a third one, but he can't get funding for it. But then again, they gave him money for Pacific Rim. So.
Why don't you give Ron Perlman Mike's phone number?
See, this is I know, right? Here's what I don't get: like they all say they don't have the money to do it, but between like. The people that are involved, you tell me they can't come up with it?
Yeah, but come you on. Think if you
self-finance and then you get all the profits.
Well, let's all get our money together and call Ron Perlman and
give him $30.
I'll give you $30 and a bag of chips.
Right.
Here you go, fuck faces.
I'm just saying he's raking in that Sons of Anarchy money.
I think you're overestimating how much Sons of Anarchy's paying.
I'm just
out.
Saying you can't tell me that these people can't come up with, you know, $100 million.
Maybe that's all they cumulatively have.
Yeah. Well, put it on the movie, you make a profit. The other two made a profit. Why would this one, in this climate, do any worse?
It probably wouldn't.
Exactly. But they'd make their money back and then probably a little more. And then they can keep all the rights to the DVDs, the Blu-rays.
You can't say that about all the comic movies, because there's a lot of movies that are comics that no one probably knows are comics.
Yeah, that Priest movie did terrible.
Yeah. That's manga, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah. But it did really bad.
Actually, now that I think about it, I bet you some studio out there has the rights to Hellboy, and that's why they couldn't do it themselves.
Kingsman. Lionsgate probably has the rights for the first two.
Well, they probably have rights to the character itself at this
point. From hell.
No, I think Dark Horse works it out where they retain like the majority rights of their characters when they sign movie deals, because they've been doing it for a long time now with Sin City and The Mask. And
you'd actually be surprised how many fucking movies they've taken from comics and...
Yeah, the Mask with Jim Carrey started out as a comic. I didn't know that till like maybe 6 months ago, but yeah, it's a Dark Horse book from back in the late 80s or something.
Dope.
Widdly what?
All right, then. Well, we all want to see it.
Let's make it happen.
Yes.
Speaking of making it happen, let's make some over-under happen. Our over-under for this week was 80s pop songs to kind of balance out our satanic categories from last week. As per huge, I will start off with overrated. 80s pop song, overrated, Tainted Love. Boom. Song's super annoying.
Soft sell?
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of is overplayed a little bit.
All right. Well, let me just put it this way. I have one of my ex-girlfriends like listened to that song like constantly, and it was super annoying. But I put up with it because, you know,
girlfriends
I got
too.
To touch butts. But now, like, if I hear that song, it makes
she
me kind of want to, like,
grab her ass.
I just kind of want to throw up a little bit. The song is so overrated. Not that good. I mean, I got a couple more, but I'm just going to stick with the one, and you guys can go ahead.
All right.
Hmm.
Does anyone else not have one? I'm guessing.
I'm still thinking.
All right. Well, I'll take this then. This was a big deal, not because of the song so much, but more of the video when it came out. Michael Jackson's Thriller.
I was thinking about that, but I really kind of still like
that. You could
that.
Take that entire album and throw it in this category, because I still to this day, and I strip away all the whole scandal with the carnivals and the weird kid stuff.
And the monkeys.
Just fucking focus on that music.
The bestiality.
How is that guy the king of pop? Like, his songs are so mediocre to me. And
well,
always,
that's what your average music fan likes.
Just
because
he did the, like, is that what
that
he
was?
Was that it?
That was better. But yours was terrible.
Or did, I don't know. All he did
because he grabbed his dong,
and
did the whole, like, you know, tippy toes.
The best Michael Jackson anything was Chris Tucker in Rush Hour 2.
No, the best Michael Jackson anything was when his hair caught on fire.
No, the best Michael Jackson anything was South Park when
he turned into a monster.
No, in South Park when
Cartman,
Kyle's brother.
Ike. The Canadian floppy head
Ike,
kid?
Yeah, I got possessed by Michael Jackson.
Dude, I need to catch up on some South Park. I'm like...
That's just ignorant.
I'm so many behind season-wise.
You gotta see that episode. It's awesome.
But yeah, I just... I mean, the video was like a big deal when it came out, and...
Well, it was probably the most expensive video up to that point with all the production that went into it. They made a little movie out of it or whatever. It was...
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, if I hear anything out that album, I just want to grab the radio and throw it into traffic.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, and I say that as, like, a dumb 8-year-old who once owned that record because everybody on the planet did, so.
I didn't.
Oh, well, whatever. I had like a single or something.
I just remember when Joe used to walk around with the one diamond glove on. That was weird.
That was 2 weeks ago. Oh. Let's let that go now.
Yes. Walking around grabbing his dick every now and then.
That was way worse than mine.
Hey, but I'm the host, okay? He's too good at that.
Yeah, that's right. You gotta grab your balls and do it.
No, I might enjoy that too much. Joseph.
My overrated would be Madonna, Like a Virgin.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's quite a few Madonna songs that can easily fit this category, but that's definitely top of the list. It was I remember because it was one of your favorite songs, and then, you know.
Oh, God. That was brutal.
Yeah, the best thing about that was the Weird Al ripoff.
Borderline is better than Like a
Dude,
Virgin.
Like a Surgeon?
Yep.
Borderline. That was awesome. Wait, never mind. Forget it.
What was the one from Snatch?
Lucky Star?
Yes.
Oh, I like that song, too.
I only like it because Bullet Tooth Tony liked it.
I remember that song.
Oh, I love this track.
But that song and Borderline, those two videos, she looks hot as fuck in those videos.
Dude, I don't remember her. Videos.
I never liked
Well, it's
because
your
her.
Sister liked her a lot, didn't
and
she?
I never liked her.
You got to pump it into your skull.
No, I had to hear that crap, and like I just grew up on... rock and metal, you know, so like at the point that like Borderline was coming out, my favorite bands were fucking Van Halen and ZZ Top and, you know, like Motley Crue, Shout at the Devil, you know. I was like friggin'
wasn't too long after that before the best favorite bands were Iron Maiden and the Misfits.
Yeah, exactly. So
and Judas Priest, thanks to Vinny.
Yeah, exactly. So
All right, Christopher, do you...
Pour some sugar on me. I hate that fucking song.
Oh, nailed it.
I hate that fucking key. Sorry.
That's another one.
That stupid ass song.
That's another one I was going to pick.
It was either going to be that or Sweet Child of Mine.
Yeah, okay. I can go with either one of those.
And I know Joe would agree with both.
Although I can play Sweet Child of Mine on the guitar.
I'm you know,
I don't mind Appetite for Destruction, but...
No, that album I'm fine with.
But that song, I just...
Well, that's the problem. It's a whole album, and you only hear two or maybe three songs off it.
Yeah, it got played out.
Although I don't own the tape anymore.
Pour Some Sugar on Me is... Oh, God.
Yeah, terrible. Dude, anyone that likes Poison, I'm sorry. You're the worst.
Def Leppard.
Def Leppard.
Whatever, Poison, Def Leppard.
Same thing.
All them just stupid about. Bands.
I well, do like
except
Pyromania.
Except for the arm count on the drummer.
I have had a lot of people, like, I shouldn't say a lot of people, but I've had people argue with me that he's the best drummer in the world because he plays with one arm.
No,
I'm like, you obviously don't know anything about
drumming. I could find you drummers that could play with one arm way better
than probably better
than
Lars Ulrich.
That's still
Dude, I'm better than Lars Ulrich.
Yeah, he's not that great either.
I mean, on the entire Bosnian Rainbows album, Dean Tony Parks plays with one hand because he's playing fucking his keyboard with the other.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and those drums are way better than Def Leppard's drums.
Yeah.
But anywho, that's a whole nother argument for another time and day.
Yes,
so, underrated, and I remember this is going back a little ways now to the skateboarding days, but I forgot the song even existed until Brian Johnson put it in one of his videos. Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Yeah.
Isn't this Tears for Fears?
It is Tears for Fears.
Yes.
Dude, Tears for Fears is awesome.
That song kicks some ass.
Dude, I love that band. They had some pretty... Man, those guys could do some stuff musically. I'm not even...
They could do some stuff.
Right? Like, it's just a song that, you know, it came out in the 80s, but you don't think about it. But then when he put it in the video, I was like, hey,
no,
well, he always had the goofiest songs in his videos, but that song fucking rules.
I you know the movie Real Genius with Val Kilmer?
Of course.
Okay. Isn't that the song that it ends out on?
Dude, I don't remember that.
I'm almost positive it is, because every time I hear that, I think of that movie, and I love that movie, which is kind of like why I like that song as well.
Yeah, that song rules.
Now, there's a Tears for Fears song.
That song rules the world.
Dude,
what?
Dude, Real Genius, movie roast.
Okay.
Boom.
I've never seen it, so that's fine.
Oh, are you serious?
Okay.
Okay, we're workshopping for another show, but let's get back to what we're talking about here.
Tears for Fears, there's a song, and I can't remember it off the top of my head, but it's one of their more popular songs, but there's an unabridged version that they'll play on Panadora. Yeah, it might be that one.
Let it all
it
out.
It might be that one. I'm not sure, but there's an instrumental add-on at the end of the song that's not on the radio version that's just awesome. Like, it goes into this, like, crazy, like, Yes type. Like,
nice.
Almost like electro-proggy stuff, and those guys could do some... They were pretty good musicians.
They could do some shit, man.
Doing stuff, doing
they weren't,
things.
They weren't the Thompson twins, that's all I'm saying.
Oh.
Well, I guess we know his pick.
No. I guarantee I have the singular only pick of my own pick.
And I'm pretty positive that I'm the only one who picked mine, which is Somebody's Watching Me by Rockwell.
I was going to...
Nice.
Wow.
Right
nice.
Now, Rockwell's listening going, yes, I have fans.
I liked that song back then.
Michael
Jackson's probably right across the street. He's sleeping on someone's couch right now. God damn it, get my career back.
Dude.
I heard Dinkins.
Hey.
He's like, I got the motivation.
I'm surprised.
So he's watching me part two.
I'm surprised Joe didn't pick Hello by Lionel Richie.
Oh, fuck that song.
Hello. Dude, that's such the creeper song.
Oh.
I'm staring in your bedroom window, eating them chicken wings.
Wow.
And I'm rubbing on my thing.
Ew.
Yikes.
Oh, God.
Easy, killer.
All
right. What about you, Captain Tablet Pants?
Let Brian go.
Oh, all right.
I don't know. I thought he wanted his big reveal for his...
I don't care. I don't need a big reveal.
All right.
I'm going a tad bit obscure here with...
I've been trying to figure it out for quite a while now.
It's the song Kiss Them For Me by Susie and the Banshees.
Oh, I like that song,
too.
Oh,
wow. Yeah, that was
it's kind of almost...
Sing it.
I don't know. It's I'll play it for you. I'll post it on Twitter or something. I don't want to sing it because it's got really... The girl's got a real distinct, kind of almost whiny voice. it kind of blends, it kind of crosses over from 80s pop to like late 80s, early 90s new wave slash alternative music in a way. Like it kind of fits in with like Violent Femmes in a way it also would fit in with like Culture Club. It's kind of like that in-betweener. But it's a pretty rad song.
All right, I got it pulled up. I'm going to listen to it when we're done.
It's a good song, dude. I actually paid money to download it. That's how much I liked it. My second pick would have been, what's that song? Night in My Veins by The Pretenders. That's another badass song.
Well, then if you're going to pick two, I'm going to pick a Big Country. Would be on next.
That, oh, you!
Here's the thing. That album
You're such a dick.
That album is terrible. But that song is amazing.
In a big country.
I love that song.
Bought that album because that song was so awesome, and that album was garbage. But I that song is amazing.
Yeah, that song kicks ass. Love that song.
That song makes me want to, like, cross country ski.
In Ireland.
Yeah, like, over a grove or something.
Over a hedge grove?
More or less.
Boom! I'm even going to pick a third one, unless you want to go before I steal another one.
There's my song.
Ooh, yes!
Why do I know this? What is this?
Oh, I thought it was you.
Oh!
Oh, dude.
All right.
That's Collins with...
Phil Bailey from Lover. Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Is that what it is?
Yes!
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
Nice.
That's, man.
We should do
a lot more fucking 80s stuff. This is a little nostalgic.
It was either going to be that, or I was going to pick Culture Club.
Karma
Time.
Time.
Oh, okay. Time Clock of the Heart is a classic.
I love that song.
Did nobody pick Europe, The Final Countdown?
Because that song
is stupid.
Tell that to Joe Bluth.
Oh, you're right. I forgot about that. All right, that
ties that would actually be on that.
Rock now, rock tonight. What?
That could have ended up on the overrated list. So,
if I was going to pick a pre-cock rock song, I would have gone Aldo Nova. Life is just a fantasy. You'd know it if you heard it.
Oh,
I probably would.
And dude, in the opening of the video,
and you have to give a shout out to Aha.
Take on Me.
Yep.
No, you know what? I would have, but there was someone I used to hang out with that overplayed the shit out of that song for me.
That song is still awesome.
Not when you got to hear it 47 times a day.
I don't care if I have to hear it 47 times a day.
48 times a day?
I'll hear it 100 times a day.
Fine.
And Don't You Forget About Me by Simple Minds, because of the John Hughes connection.
Easy Lover, though, 1,000 times.
Keep doing this all day.
Well, I'm just saying, The Breakfast Club, for all intents and purposes, is one of the best movies of that decade.
We should pick some more 80s stuff.
Disagree.
Yeah.
Without John Hughes, there's no Kevin Smith, there's no Judd Apatow.
That should be the song that you use instead of Shellac.
I can do that.
Let's just call Phil Collins up right now at his mega mansion and see if he'll let us use it.
And here's the best part of it.
Phil's cool like that.
Taking hold of.
How about, what's that song by Jeffrey Osborne? Baby, stay with me tonight.
No idea.
What about Ray Parker Jr.?
Ooh.
Not the Ghostbusters song either. Aww. I'm talking about I'm in love with the other woman. And it's got the zombies and Frankenstein.
What
in the
about
video.
Cameo? Word up.
Yeah.
No, that's
the code word.
All right, maybe.
Yeah, come on.
Electric Avenue is way better.
I was just putting that on.
I used to love this song, like, intensely. Like, it'd come
Electric
on.
Electric Avenue.
This song would come on, and I'd have to, like, stop what I'm doing. It'd be like, ugh. We're gonna rock down to Electric. I used to have weird daydreams that if I walked down the street with a boombox with either this song or that police song, Every Step You Take.
Oh,
yeah.
If I was walking down the street with a boombox and the right girl saw me, she'd think I was cool. Clearly
that
never worked.
My best story about some shit like that, I had the worst, smallest fucking boombox, and I was all fucking walking down the street. I made it about four houses down, and all the girls were sitting on the porch, and my batteries died. I was like, you fucking suck.
I kind of want to.
I fucking ran back home like a little bitch.
I kind of want to throw in metal
fucking
health.
Fucking tortured
too.
When I was a kid. Sorry.
Yeah.
Who sang that one song? I am the warrior.
Yeah, it's Pat Benatar.
No, it's not. I don't think it is.
All right, let's look it up.
Look it up.
Or is it Joan Jett?
Oh, Patti Smith.
Is and it?
The, yeah.
I Am the Warrior. Are you sure that's her?
Yeah.
Hard to hard to win
yep,
if you survive.
Yep, there it is.
Oh.
All right.
We're having too much fun here.
That wasn't what I listened to in the 80s.
Right, you were all about Madonna.
You're too brutal for us.
There are some 80s songs that I've grown to like.
You were listening to what, Dio and...
Dude, Dio was part of my 80s diet back in the day.
I thought you said Devo.
You're the last in line.
That's the video.
At that point, it was more like Quiet Riot,
I liked
Judas
Yet.
Priest.
No, not Judas Priest. That was later 80s. Quiet Riot was mid 80s because that was on TV.
I was going to throw in Metal Health.
We would see the video for.
Come on, Feel the Noise.
You've Got Another Thing Coming.
I never heard a Judas Priest song until I was in seventh grade. Fact.
No, I.
I
knew Judas Priest because of. Free Wheel Burning.
What's the song where they're like fucking jamming out on the highway?
Heading out on the highway.
Yeah, dude, we heard that song all the time when we were fucking in like fifth, sixth grade.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have cable, but fucking this guy in the Russians had cable and we'd watch the video.
Dude.
No, I didn't have it.
No, Channel 66 back in the 80s. That played.
All I remember is we used to watch the shit out of that video and we would fucking.
You're trying to tell me
kids.
You didn't watch Channel 66?
66, yeah. That's where
they played videos
maybe.
24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And that's where I saw Twisted Sister, Quiet Riot.
Oh, Twisted Sister was another one.
Stay Hungry is a good album.
Right. No, but in the early 80s?
We need to move this along.
This is getting out of control.
You're going to burn in hell.
Right.
Oh, burn in hell.
Okay, so as usual, we'll wrap things up with our best thing ever for the week. And
Phil Collins and Phil Bailey.
Yeah, this is going to be a cheesy thing, but this whole the 80s overrated underrated was pretty fucking awesome for me.
I'm going to throw on out of that one too, actually.
Yeah. I kind of figured you would pick The Witcher, but
The Witcher's good, but I can keep going for another half hour.
I know we all could. That's why we need to do more 80s stuff, like maybe next week.
The Witcher
week.
Is good.
Or you could just get The Witcher and put an 80s soundtrack to it. So he's running through the fields going.
We'll put it on YouTube.
I actually have The Witcher soundtrack in my truck. And
oh, yeah,
because
it came with
player.
Yep. Didn't you get it with your game?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was also, I could have thrown in the Gap Band. You dropped a bomb on me.
Oh, see, that's better than the Word Up.
Yeah, maybe we should do like a whole special like 80s show.
Word up.
You guys are all super old, but I can still hang a little bit.
Dude, you're fucking like 3 or 4 years younger.
Yeah, way to go, old pants.
So what, you're still born in the 70s?
I forgot Owner of a Lonely Heart. No, we were just talking about that earlier.
I'll
just say this, 90125, amazing album. Not just saying that because that song is great. That whole record rules.
Yeah.
And that's
there's a ton of songs I could have thrown in. I could have thrown in Rush, Subdivisions.
Yeah.
Does that really count as 80s pop, though?
Eh.
I mean, I don't care. It's still 80s.
Then fine. Tom Sawyer.
I don't know.
Limelight.
Well, either way.
Red Barchetta.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's that? Fly By Night or whatever? That's another super popular fucking song.
That's the only Rush song that I don't like.
I know.
Which one?
You're very expressive about that.
Fly By Night, yes.
Well, either way, continuing on with the theme of best thing ever, both of my, which was what we were doing. Mine, I have a two-parter that is, they're both video game related. I just picked up The Witcher yesterday morning.
Which means he's not a woman anymore.
And I played it for probably a good 6-7 hours straight, and it is awesome.
Fine, I'll go get it today.
And it's kick-ass.
Fucking good.
And they just released Tanya for Combat Pack owners
and
Mortal Kombat X. Oh. So she just came out, and I was playing around with her. She's really, really cool.
Okay.
She's got a lot of features, a lot of options. Teleports.
She can bend her legs behind her neck, and
she's pretty nuts. So she's an interesting character.
She swallows.
Actually, if you could clarify the difference between features and options, that'd be good.
That'd be awesome to describe your significant other. She's got some real good features and some awesome options. Trust me, it's like you're like.
Well, anywho, let's wrap this on up. As always, you can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX, Joe at Grampire, Chris at SkateXEdge, Brian at PR Rock Fury. You can find all of our shows, previous shows,
in the garbage,
and future shows in the garbage and on comicroast.com. And from there, we have links to our iTunes, our Stitcher, so you can easily subscribe and download to those. And go to reviewandroast.com, make your account, start commenting and leaving reviews. And let's do some things.
Play The Witcher.
And play The Witcher, because we all need to... Well, I still need to get it, because I'm fucking poor, so...
Yeah.
And if you play Mortal Kombat X and you want to beat me up online, then give me a holler.
They kind of need to know your thing, then.
It's at
Uncle Grandpa.
Through Twitter. You don't want to give your PlayStation name out, basically, is what you're saying.
It's Uncle Grandpa.
Right.
Talk to me on Twitter, and then I'll let you know.
It's Grandpa right. Lover.
Well, until next time, have a good week.
Take it easy.
You are now leading the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.